broadcasting for the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and in just a moment we'll bring in our guest for the evening, registered nurse Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne of Patients Out of Time. But first, I want to give you the latest on the heroin news from our friend up in Pittsburgh.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Last weekend's Houston Chronicle reported that during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, that some U.S. Cold Warriors viewed cheap Afghan heroin as a plus because thousands of occupying Soviet troops became addicted. But now the shoe may be on the other foot. This week's first report is from Pravda, dated December 5th of last year. The Russian deputy drug czar, Alexander Mikhailov, stated that U.S. soldiers are developing drug problems in Afghanistan and that the U.S. leadership is keeping it quiet. He added that they don't have control of the situation. In this year's April 12th New Yorker, Seymour Hersh reported that a number of military and CIA officials have told him about increasing reports of heroin use by American military personnel in Afghanistan. He quotes a former U.S. intelligence officer who says that the Pentagon senior leadership has a head-in-the-sand attitude. Last week, James Dunigan, Fox News military analyst, reported that U.S. troops are, quote, under attack by cheap Afghan heroin, end quote, and that the United States will now begin random drug testing of American troops in Iraq. Also last week, the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, Lieutenant General David Barnow, conceded that U.S. troops will not destroy the Afghan opium crops. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
I hope you're enjoying these reports from Glenn. He's doing a good job on this. I think that next week he's going to look more into the fact that there's terrible diseases that are spread by this heroin as well, by this black market heroin. Last Saturday, the Washington Post came out with a story, and they're talking about the fact that religions all across America are getting ready, are getting on the bandwagon of ending this war on medical marijuana patients. And here's a little story I put together in that regard.
Hi, this is Charles Thomas, Executive Director of the Interfaith Drug Policy Initiative. People of faith, just like the vast majority of Americans in general, do support legal access to medical marijuana for seriously ill people. Over the past 20-some years, numerous religious denominations have taken favorable positions on medical marijuana, going back to the Episcopal Church in 1982, right up through the United Methodist Church this year, and the Union for Reform Judaism last year. And what we did at the Interfaith Drug Policy Initiative is look through all of the various religious denominations' positions on medical marijuana, if they had any. And what we found is a number of religious denominations did already have favorable positions supporting legal access to medical marijuana, and no denominations had any positions opposing specifically medical marijuana. To briefly wrap up, what we've done is made sure now that every member of Congress knows this, knows their denomination's position, and that if any of these members of Congress are people who are always up grandstanding about morality, then this is the time to see if they're really willing to put their money where their mouths are. Are they really willing to give serious consideration to their own religious denomination's views on morality? Or if not, then where are they getting their ideas of morality? Are they just using terms like morality and compassion and family values to actually advocate for very cruel policies? I mean, that's what I wonder of President Bush. He's a United Methodist. He claims that Jesus changed his heart, that Jesus leads his heart. But I can't imagine Jesus leading the president to send federal agents into California and point guns at seriously ill people and arrest them and cart them off to prison. I can't imagine that that's what Jesus wants George Bush to do, and yet that's what he's doing. And all of these religious denominations see very clearly that it's wrong to arrest seriously ill people for using.
I hope that strikes a chord with you, because think about this. The person sitting next to you on the pew next week probably wants to end this drug war just as much as you, but fear gets in the way. Well, Steve tells me that we do have our guests online, and once again, I want to say that we have Mary Lynn Mathry. She's a registered nurse, and her husband, Al Byrne. Are y'all with us?
Yes, we are here.
Hello, Mary Lynn.
Hi.
It's good to have you with us. I'm really happy that you could join us, and I was wondering if you could start us off with a discussion about the cannabis convention, the international conference last month.
Right. Last May, this was our third clinical conference on cannabis therapeutics, the third in a series. We'll keep going every other year. Pretty much a great success. We had it in Charlottesville, Virginia, co-sponsored by the University of Virginia School of Medicine. Other supporters were the University of Virginia School of Nursing, School of Law, and the Virginia Nurses Association. Pretty much we had speakers. We had Raphael Meshulam come from Israel to talk about its neuroprotective attributes. We had Dr. Jeffrey Guy come from England to speak about their work with Sativex, an oral mucosal spray of cannabis extract used for their clinical trials have been on patients with multiple sclerosis. We had Wilhelm Scholten from the Netherlands come and talk about how their program is working very well in the Netherlands for almost 1 year now of dispensing cannabis through the pharmacies in the Netherlands. And numerous other people, Philip Lucas from Canada, talking about their Compassion Club and how they're doing research on the various strains of cannabis and following their patients very closely, as well as many researchers throughout the United States. I think one of the highlights of the conference itself actually was the Mothers Know Best panel, where we had various moms, grandmoms, talking about how they helped get cannabis for their kids to get them through some very serious illnesses.
Well, I want to learn more about that. The one of the things that you touched on caught my attention, and that's the neurotherapeutics, the gentleman out of Israel. Tell us more about that, if you will.
Okay. It's actually a bit hard to hear you here, but in terms of the neuroprotective, Dr. Meshulam has actually developed one particular medication, a cannabinoid, dexanabinol, and what they're using that for is doing clinical trials. Now they've done them in Israel, and they're currently doing them at in the United States at 15 trauma centers, giving it to severe head trauma patients. This drug given to them fairly quickly after the injury, within 6 hours, the hope is that it actually helps the body's general response to such an injury, the inflammatory response and the response to stop other things going on, ends up causing a lot more damage than the injury itself can cause. And so this medication helps put a little control into all of that, slow things down, and the healing process then, or the damage done from the body's immediate mechanism, isn't as severe. You know, that's not on the market yet, but they hope to do so. But he also just went through its whole, the cannabinoids as we know them, our endogenous cannabinoids, just that they're very, seem to be healing in the neurological system. And, you know, multiple sclerosis patients have been saying this for years who've used it, that they actually get better with the cannabis.
Well, this is wonderful news. Now, is Al there with you?
Yeah, here, just a second.
Let me speak with him for a moment.
Yes, Dave.
Hi, Al. Welcome to Cultural Baggage once again. I wanted to get your take. You know, she mentioned the mother speaking out, and from a male perspective, what did you hear in that discussion?
Well, it was pretty powerful. The reports we got from everybody, including me, were that this was a most effective demonstration of compassion. These are mothers and grandmothers who were forced, because of their children's or grandchildren's injuries or sicknesses, to, you know, go out on the black market, procure cannabis in an unknown way, in an unknown, you know, source, and give it to their kids and grandkids and see them respond favorably. And these were five women, all mature women, from ages of mid-40s to mid-80s, who had who sat up there and told us how priests and ministers had brought them cannabis for their children and grandchildren, how their neighbors and family had supported them and brought them more cannabis for their children and grandchildren. It was an amazing display of openness about the subject matter, and we had hoped that it would be that effective, frankly, because it was dealing with a very sensitive subject matter, the use of cannabis by children.
Now, I don't know if you're aware, last week our guest here was Dr. Robert Melamede out of the University of Colorado, and he spoke about the cannabinoid systems and how it's a part of many systems within our body, our brains, our muscles, etc., have these receptors. Would you talk on some of the discussion in that regard that was held at the conference?
Yeah, sure. Well, Dr. Melamede was there, and he's an excellent speaker and a very knowledgeable man on the subject. It's only been in the last, say, 4 or 5 years that science has brought us the knowledge that our bodies have receptor sites in various organs throughout our bodies that are particularly attuned, if you will, to receiving cannabis in its natural form. And the interesting thing is that we're finding these receptor sites in places that ordinarily we probably wouldn't have expected them, no matter what we thought. There are receptor sites in our lungs, in different organs of our body. They're virtually all over us. And what it shows in one sense is that the experience of the human body with cannabis must go back thousands of years in order for us to have adapted to this plant. To have these receptor sites available to the plant has to have taken a long progression of time. The other thing it shows is that the plant's interface with the human body must have been positive. Toxic materials are not developed within our human body over time to have receptor sites. We have receptor sites for things that are good for us. So what Dr. Melamede explained to the audience at the conference, this system of receptor sites is available to us and helps us balance, helps our own bodies balance itself. There's more work to be done here, surely. But the notion that these receptor sites have been identified, that they're so prolific within our bodies, is a very, very positive sign.
When we come back, I want to find out about some of the ongoing studies, both in the United States and abroad, that are currently underway.
Roundup. Now with Cosmo Flux.
Responsible for the destruction of 30% of the Amazonian rainforest, more than 1 million Colombian refugees, and millions in profits for Monsanto Laboratories.
Okay, let's say drug prohibition does support terrorism.
And murder.
Torture.
Corruption. Bribery.
And whatever.
What's your point?
Change the law.
I gotcha. Make it cheap. More available. Everywhere. Like soda or cheesy puffs.
Exactly.
Cocaine at the playground. Crack stands at the laundromat. Heroin at the mini mart. Like that?
Face it, old man. That's what we've got now.
To learn more, visit the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
Hi, this is Valerie Corral, and I'm the director of the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. Please support our Constitution and free speech through the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its Side Effects.
constipation or diarrhea, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, blurred vision, difficulty passing urine, skin rash, itching, yellowing of the skin or eyes, unusual weakness, and fevers. Time's up. The answer, Crestor, another FDA-approved product. If you would like to get a CD copy of this or any of our programs featuring judges, scientists, doctors, lawyers, people from all over the world to share with Redneck Uncle Bubba, please visit unvarnishedtruth.org.
Okay, we are back with Mary Lynn Mathry, a registered nurse, and Al Byrne of Patients Out of Time. And before the break, I asked them if they wouldn't share with us some of the studies that are underway here in the U.S. and around the world.
Yes. A lot of different studies going on. As I had mentioned earlier with the conference, GW Pharmaceuticals talking about its work with multiple sclerosis patients, they're now using that same medication, trying it for neuropathic pain, various forms of the chronic pain patients endure with some kind of nerve damage. Very common problem in the United States and elsewhere, so this could mean a world of difference for patients. Actually, there's some great research going on near us in Richmond, Virginia, at the Virginia Commonwealth University, and that's a little bit more basic research, some animal research still at this point, but what they found is working with adding THC to an opiate. In particular, they've used it with morphine. But putting the two medications together has been a real, what it produces is a synergistic effect, meaning it doesn't just one and one is two, it's like one and one could be four in terms of the effects. It really helps patients, well, I'm saying patients, but the effects they saw in the mice were that it effectively took care of their pain at a lower dose of the opiate. So that if you take that out, and this is what patients have been saying for years and years, very much anecdotal evidence, let alone the old bottles of cannabis had this on their label as well. If you combine this with an opiate, you use the lower dose, they have no problems with the constipation, less worry of overdose, less worry of physical dependence from the opiate, takes care of the nausea that people sometimes get with various opiates. So this could be a real breakthrough in pain management down the road, and I see that as one of the big highlights.
Before you go on, I do want to hear more of these studies, but I wanted to alert the listeners that the medicine you're speaking of, if I'm not mistaken, is Sativex, made by GW Pharmaceuticals out of Great Britain, right?
Right. For the neuropathic pain, that was Sativex by GW Pharmaceuticals, a clinical extract. Now, the studies in Richmond at the Virginia Commonwealth University, they're specifically just with THC. Again, they're down trying to get to that more of the single chemical to work with, but the synergy is looking really significant.
All right.
Now, Donald Abrams out in California is doing more research with cannabis, the full plant cannabis. He's actually going to do some research now on the Volcano vaporizer. It's a vaporizer that's been developed in Germany, and they're going to actually try to do some studies to see if it does, in fact, decrease any kind of lung problems, if there's fewer carcinogens in the smoke, et cetera. And I think we've talked about this before, but just so the listeners know, a vaporizer is a device that's heating the cannabis to the point where vapors are released and can be inhaled, but not hot enough to the point of combustion. So there is no fire, there is no burning. So you're not, the patient is not inhaling smoke. Now everyone seems to think it sounds like a good idea, everything's fine, but he's actually going to try to be doing some clinical trials to really test this and see, is this still delivering what they want, the cannabinoids they want delivered, and is it decreasing the problems caused by what happens when you do smoke the medicine.
I understand that there was a good selection of media attended the conference, and hopefully we'll be doing some shows as well. Montel Williams, for one, was there. Talk about his situation, if you would. He's an MS patient, is he not?
Right. I think Montel Williams, I believe he was diagnosed in 1999 with multiple sclerosis. Very, very devastating for him as it started progressing. And he found out about cannabis and has been using medical marijuana. He did get arrested, and he still speaks up for it. I imagine he's got enough lawyers, he's gotten off it. But he's found this very helpful. And the good news is he's become very open about it. He's got a new book out called Climbing Higher by Montel Williams. A whole chapter is devoted to his use of marijuana. And he also did a show on, I believe it was January 13th of this year, where he actually came out. He was the person being interviewed. He turned the tables and let him be the guest on his own show, so to speak, and talked about, in that show specifically, he talked about his use of cannabis and basically said to the audience, please listen to me first. I want to explain something. And he told them how much pain he was having from multiple sclerosis. Again, this is a strange disease in that it's different for almost every patient, but he had a lot of this really hypersensitivity on his, clothes touching him would cause great pain. And his physicians prescribed narcotics, and he told the audience, I could take these, and if they took care of the pain, I was then a zombie. There was no way I could work. If this was my way of life, I would have to quit working on my show and just stay at home. I would be unable to function otherwise. I would be too drugged. He found out about cannabis. He uses that, takes care of the pain, and he functions. He functions very well. And he was so sick at one point, again in his book he talks about this, he actually was contemplating suicide very seriously. And as an ex-Marine, he was going to do it with a gun. And then finally broke through that. But the cannabis, he said, now has made life manageable for him. So, yes, as you said, we did have someone from the Montel Williams Show and their foundation at the conference. They were very impressed with what they learned, and they pretty much promised that they're going to do some more shows this year on cannabis. Cannabis and multiple sclerosis patients, but possibly touching some broader issues as well. So we're really happy about that.
Now, I understand that there were many, I guess from the reform movement there as well, and one of my favorites, Valerie Corral of Wham, spoke. And if you would talk about her situation there, the group that grows this marijuana, does not sell it, tends it, and shares in the harvest based on need.
Yeah, Valerie Corral and her husband, Mike Corral, they run one of the, probably the premier compassion club, Santa Cruz Compassion Club. It's been in existence for a number of years before California passed its medical marijuana law. The city county of Santa Cruz passed a local resolution kind of acknowledging them and have it as something that the police should not disturb. But they have a beautiful garden. They primarily serve patients who are hospice end-of-life patients, anywhere from 250 to 300 patients or so. They encourage patients to be involved. Some of the patients actually come and help do the gardening. They take donations, but they will give any of their patients cannabis. They will just make sure they do get a supply. Now, again, some of the your listeners might be aware that they underwent a bust a few years ago, and quite extreme, very nasty, high, many, many police on these people who are just totally, defenseless. Since then, they destroyed the crops, etc. But the county stood up for them after the fact and actually deputized them. And it was a message back to the DEA, the federal level DEA, saying, these are not criminals. We don't see these people as criminals. They run something that's very effective for patients here in California, and we want them to continue with their work. And right now, where they're standing, they are continuing to run it as a compassion club.
I wanted to ask Al another question here.
Okay.
I hear these stories coming out of the Netherlands that They want to shut down the clubs, and then someone else says, no, they're not going to do it. And I understand Dr. Wilhelm Scholten, if I got that right, was there, and he reported on what's going on in the Netherlands. And Al, I was wondering if you'd tell us what he had to say.
Sure. You got the name almost right. It's Willem. It's W-I-L-L-E-M, very, very Netherlands spelling.
All right.
Dr. Scholten is a wonderful fellow, came over and was very social with us all, and not only made a fine presentation, but what was very generous in his private time of explaining what's going on in the Netherlands. And essentially it's this, that country has determined its medical patients should receive cannabis the medicine, just like it receives any other medicine. So they have established a pharmacy system of distribution for medical cannabis. Dr. Scholten oversees this. It has been in operation for about a year, and he went into great detail, but in summary, his report to us at the conference was that the system that he has in place has worked just fine. The patients are happy. The government is happy. The medical community is happy. The law enforcement is happy. There's been no abuse of the drug. There's been no diversion. There's been no problems. They have treated the people of the Netherlands are adults, and they have handled this like adults. Our country doesn't seem to think that our citizens are adults, but in the Netherlands they have more respect for the citizens. And Dr. Scholten says that it has just been a fine, fine program. When I last talked to him, which was about 2 weeks ago, he was on his way to New Zealand. And he was going to spend a good bit of time down there explaining to that country and its legislators how successful the Netherlands program was. So hopefully that with Dr. Scholten's travels, and I'm sure that New Zealand is his only stop, that the word of the success of the Netherlands in handling cannabis as a true medicine will be spread.
If folks wanted to learn more about your work, or where would you like to point them to on the internet?
I think there's two places I'd like them to go, two web addresses. One would be
www.medicalcannabis.com.
Medicalcannabis.com.
Right.
And the other one would be www.drugscience.org. Drugscience.org. That particular website contains the petition that has been accepted by the DEA to reschedule cannabis from its prohibited schedule number. It is something that all of us that are interested in the subject matter should be conversant of, and I would hope people would go there. It's an extensive, long, but very well done study of what's going on. Please go to those sites. And thank you so much, Dean, for having us on.
Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry, I thank you for joining us. The next week, our guest will be Richard Watkins, senior warden at the Love Lady Prison Unit here in Texas. And as always, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.